אתם עם SBS בעברית.
Today we're joined by Ohad Bloomberg, Israel's Trade Commissioner in Australia and Head of the Trade and Economic Commission. He's responsible for building trade links, encouraging investment, and connecting Australian businesses with Israel's innovation economy. Ohad, great to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Mariel, and I'm happy to be on your show.
Now, Ohad, your job sounds like an absolute thrill. You're at the coalface of international business and trade and industry events and networking hubs. And I'm sure you're speaking to captains of industries, and it all sounds really all-consuming and truly compelling. So tell us how it is that you arrived here in Sydney, Australia, and more broadly, what it is that you do every day.
Okay, so that's a good question. So I'm an Israeli diplomat, and I've been part of the Ministry of Economy and Industry for the last 12 years now. And we're part of an organization that is called the Foreign Trade Administration, if you want to have the Australian equivalent, so it's the equivalent of Austrade, and we're under the Ministry of Economy and Industry. And we have a network of 55 offices around the world that are based in the economic hubs of the world, in all corners of the earth. And what we do is quite simple. We promote Israeli businesses, technologies, and commercial partnerships in the geographies that we are positioned. And what we do in a day-to-day is we actually are the face of the Israeli industry in Australia or in New Zealand, in my case. And we are actively promoting the Israeli technology founders and companies in order to enter the Australian market, to engage more with the Australian corporate world, and to attract investments into the Israeli economy. And as you mentioned, I arrived here 3.5 years ago. I'm married with 3 children, and we are based in Sydney. The Israel Trade Commission is based in Sydney, Australia, and we cover the whole of Australia. And yes, it's a very interesting role to do, and I'm enjoying my work every day.
Yeah, I can imagine. And how much of your role is steeped in diplomacy? Would you consider yourself a diplomat?
So, in a way, we are all diplomats, all the trade commissioners of Israel around the world. We are Israeli diplomats, but we do have some diplomatic component to our work. But more broadly, I would say that what we do on a day-to-day basis is more connected to business development. So think of us as a business development managers of the entire Israeli tech ecosystem. So what we do on a daily basis, we scout for opportunities for the Israeli companies that are, they are our, if you want to call it, our customers. And we provide them with business opportunities, and we can do that in very different ways. One way that we are doing that is through events. We promote events and conferences, exhibitions that are happening in Israel, and we invite Australian stakeholders to take part and to travel to Israel, and we would support their visit with introductions to interesting and relevant Israeli founders and stakeholders. Another way that we provide assistance to the Israeli industry is through delegations that we bring from Israel to Australia or New Zealand, and we take them on a tour to meet with industry leaders in Australia that can be relevant for their business. And a third option that we are offering to the Israeli industry is that in international exhibitions that are attracting attention and people and stakeholders from around the world, including from Australia, normally we would build an Israeli pavilion, and Israeli companies would present in that pavilion, and we would invite our stakeholders from Australia to visit that pavilion, to have a tour and to meet with the Israeli founders in that specific exhibitions. And I can give you a few examples. We are supporting a very big Israeli event in RSA in a couple of months' time. That is in San Francisco. And this is a cyber event, and there will be a huge Israeli presence under the Israeli pavilion there. And we would support those businesses that are keen to engage with Australian stakeholders. And in that event, we would provide introductions, physical introductions, to the Australian stakeholders with those Israeli businesses.
Okay, got it. But when assessing potential partnerships, are there thresholds around size or market capitalization, such as $10 million or above, that determine whether a business is eligible to engage with you?
So what the threshold is mainly whether that business is involved already in some kind of an export activity. And when I say export, normally people think of, you know, goods, but actually we deal mostly with export of services like high-tech software and things like that. And the threshold normally would require some activity already overseas, especially in a market like Australia that tends to prefer products and services that are already active elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So this is something that we would discuss with the company, whether they are ready for the Australian market. But we deal with a lot of startups that are very, very innovative and have sold just a little bit overseas. But since they are so innovative, Australia can be, in certain areas, a place for them to be active in.
Excuse my naivete with asking this question, but is there an equivalent role of an Australian Trade Commissioner in Israel doing the same thing as you are here?
So Austrade does have an office in Israel, and they promote Australian businesses to engage in the Israeli market. So the question to that is yes. And there are other partners that we do work with. Austrade is just one of them. But, for example, we are promoting an Australian delegation to Israel in June for Cyber Week. And we do that in collaboration with the Trans-Tasman Business Circle, which is an organization here in Australia. And we build the delegation in collaboration with them. So, yes, there is an equivalent, but there are other organizations that we work in collaboration that do have similar activity.
Okay, and we'll get to Cyber Week in just a second. But before we reach that, I've read that Australia now ranks as the sixth country globally as a destination for Israeli business service exports. As the Israeli Trade Commissioner to Australia, are you as well versed on both countries' trade and economy, or do you have a predilection for one more so than the other?
So as the Israeli representative here in Australia related to trade and economic activity, we serve mainly the Israeli industry. So we are responsible for to assist Israeli businesses into Australia and to attract Australian investors to invest in Israel. It is true that Australia now ranks sixth destination for Israeli service providers, and it's mainly in high tech. And it's a very interesting dynamic because it's important to understand why. There is a reason behind it, why Australia ranks so high.
Why?
it's no secret that Australia is probably the furthest place from Israel possible. So, you know, trading goods is a barrier because of the distance, the logistics, the cost, and for services, it's much, much easier. And it's a very interesting market for Israeli businesses because, first, it's an English-speaking country. It's a very advanced economy that can value Israeli high-quality Israeli high-tech. And third, it's a very good hub to work in the entire Asia-Pacific region from Australia because of the talent that there is here, because of the ease of doing business. And Israeli businesses some of them are active only in the Australian market from here, but many of them are active around the Asia-Pacific from their Sydney or Melbourne bases. And in fact, there are more than 150 Israeli companies with a local representation or an office that are active in the Australian market, and that number is quite high.
Commissioner, you've been hard at work here in Australia since 2022. How are you finding Australian attitudes towards Israeli trade, specifically with a pre- and post-October 7 marker?
Listen, obviously October 7th was a turning point in terms of Israel in general, in Israeli economy more broadly, and it did affect our activity because in any conflict is not good for business. However, I have to say that we were able to navigate and to adjust our activity to make it more appropriate in how we do things. For example, the because we couldn't take a lot of delegations from Australia to Israel, we put a focus on bringing more delegations from Israel to Australia. And we have managed to do a lot of things virtually, or to substitute things that were supposed to be physical in Israel to virtual activity. We saw a surge of Israeli companies coming to tour around Australia, and we assisted them with business introductions and with their meetings here around Australia.
But was it met with ambivalence or antagonism? How did Australians welcome Israeli companies here to Australia?
So, you know, obviously there were very, very minimal, and I have to say very minimal, resentment, but the vast majority of interactions and introductions that we've made were very, very much welcomed. When you are a business leader or a corporate, what you're focused on mainly is getting the best technology and the best outcome from an economic perspective and from a technological perspective to your business. And I can say that there are very, very few countries that have that type of ecosystem as in Israel, and that goes from cyber to fintech to defense technologies to agri-tech to medical technologies. And, you know, when we are in a room, in a closed room, technology speaks and business speaks, and it's much more powerful than politics. And for us, I'm very, very happy. We just summarized 2025, and I'm very happy and proud of our accomplishment and the fact that we were able to adjust quickly as an organization and as an office, and still provide many opportunities for our stakeholders, both in Australia and in Israel.
Right, okay. Now, I read this the other week. International credit rating agency Moody's recently just raised Israel's credit outlook from negative to stable at the end of last month. Why did this happen, and how will this impact cross-cultural or international investment in Israel's economy?
So I think that there are various reasons to that decision. First, the fact that there is a ceasefire in Israel and in Gaza obviously contributes to that decision. And the fact that the Israeli economy has been able to accomplish such achievements during those 2.5 years, it's quite remarkable. And the world sees that, and, you know, investors see that, and business leaders see that. You know, in fact, 2025 saw a growth of 18% in investments, in foreign investments in Israel, which is quite remarkable when you think that,
from
you know,
from
2025, from the beginning of 2025 to the end of 2025, which is a fair bit of time during a war. And investors showed confidence and security in the Israeli tech ecosystem. We've seen some of the biggest exits in Israel's history during that time. Israel's GDP in the third quarter of 2025 rose by 11%. The Tel Aviv Stock Exchange saw an unprecedented growth of 53%. That's more than double than the equivalent in New York, in S&P or NASDAQ. These are, you know, numbers that are quite important when you think of a country that was in a war for 2.5 years. And this is not by chance. This is a vote of confidence in the Israeli economy, in the Israeli tech ecosystem, because it's built on talent, on people, and not on conflict. And the people, the talent is there, and the businesses continue to deliver during the war, and we continue to deliver during the war, and that is something that the world sees.
Ohad, you host and attend some pretty incredible conferences and summits. One that caught my attention is the upcoming SAMHSA International Smart Mobility Summit. There's an enviable list of attendees and speakers. People like Elon Musk, Miri Regev will be there, who's, of course, the Minister of Transport and Road Safety. You've also got the Executive Director of Group Innovation at Volkswagen, Dr. Nikolai Audrey. Does a summit with this kind of prestige reinstate Israel as a trade-worthy country that's back on top despite the geopolitical challenges?
So I think that 2025 will be a year that Israel will draw business attention in terms of traffic and conferences again. And I think this is an excellent example of the Smart Mobility Summit in 2026, which, by the way, traditionally is hosted by the Prime Minister and the Prime Minister's office. And, you know, Israel doesn't have a huge industry in cars or rails, but what it does have is an excellent ecosystem of startups that are assisting, you know, all those world leaders in transportation and vehicle manufacturing, in cyber, in smart manufacturing, in road safety, and in many other components that are crucial today to the evolvement of mobility. And,
but what's the carrot for them to come to Israel? I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of summits and events around the world. Like, why would the head of innovation at Volkswagen go to Israel for a summit like this as opposed to going to somewhere like Berlin?
Because I think that exactly the reason why we have more than 500 multinational companies, some of the biggest companies in the world and the tech giants of the world, they have their research and development facilities in Israel. Probably one, I mean, most of them, it's the first one out of the U.S. or their home country. And everyone wants a piece of the Israeli ecosystem, of the Israeli talent, of the engineers, of the innovation. And because we have more than 500 multinational R&D and innovation precincts in Israel, that draws attention to such a tiny nation. You know, Israel is called the startup nation, or now the scale-up nation, but it comes for a reason. And the reason is that because Israel today has the highest investment in research and development as a percentage of the GDP, and in a very growing gap. And, you know, the high-tech sector comprises more than 50% of Israel's total export. It encompasses 20% of Israel's GDP, 30% of tax in Israel. These are major numbers that show how the tech ecosystem or high tech in Israel plays a vital role. But it's not a vital role just for the Israeli economy. It contributes to many of the world's largest tech companies and companies in general that have some kind of an Israeli component in their technology. And everyone wants a piece of that, and this is why Israel draws such an attention from people like Elon Musk.
High tides raise all boats, but I'm tempted to ask you if there's a danger of microeconomies within the larger Israeli economy, namely from the tech sector where people can make annual salaries that approximate Silicon Valley salaries. So is that a dangerous thing, and can that keep dividing the economy in Israel?
So I think that the Israeli economy is driven certainly in the last, I would say, 10 years in terms of growth by Israeli high tech. And we have to remember that Israeli high tech is responsible for a big chunk of the GDP, but actually in terms of the people who are actually employed by that sector, it's much, much smaller than that. And yes, Israel has a major inequality in the population, which there are governmental programs in order to adjust that inequality. And that is why high tech is being urged to not only be in the Tel Aviv area, but also in the north and in the south. So we have a lot of government programs in order to build, for example, space and deep tech precincts in the south, or food tech precincts in the north, desert tech and agro in the Negev area. So there are programs and initiatives in order to make that more available to other populations and communities. So hopefully that will be something that we'll see in the next 5 to 10 years.
I've never heard of the term desert tech. I love it. Desalination or what?
Yes, it has a lot of subtexts underneath. So one of them is around water and water scarcity. Other things is related to energy and renewable energy. Another subsector is around agriculture. Because, you know, it's quite remarkable when you visit Israel and you think that more than 50% of Israel is actually a desert, but when you drive in that desert, you see so many farms and agriculture and communities, and everyone has everything that they need, and you know, the farms, and even grow wine.
Sustaining and
Yes, Israel has a lot of experience in those areas, and it was mainly driven by technology that was invented in Israel. You know, the first drip irrigation that was invented was invented by Netafim in kibbutz outside of Be'er Sheva. And for a reason, because we didn't have any water and we needed to work out what do we do, because there was a need for food and crops.
So it was a solution to a problem.
Yeah, like you know, every they say the need is the mother of invention, and Israel had to take care of itself through technology.
And would you say that's what the special sauce is for the whole innovation sector in Israel?
So I think it's a combination of first, yes, there is obviously innovation was driven by the need to create military superiority. So a lot of the innovation came out of or spun out of the army. There was a need for the growing population to feed the growing population because of immigration, because of the high fertility rate. There was a need to deal with all the medical needs of that growing population. So a lot of the medical innovation was driven by that. But there's also a role for the fact that Israel has a very strong collaboration between three components. One is the academia, the second is government, and the third is the industry. And that triangle really drives innovation forward because there is a shared cause or purpose from a national point of view in order to drive innovation for the existence of the country. So there isn't one, you know, secret sauce, but these are different components that drive innovation and make Israel what it is today.
Ohad, before we leave, can we drill down on some names that we should know about here in Australia of Israeli companies?
There are many Israeli companies that are market leaders. So one that I've already mentioned is Netafim, that are doing drip irrigation all around Australia and other ag-related components. Another Israeli company is Monday.com, that is building management for project, software management for project. Other companies are market leaders such as SodaStream. All these companies are market leaders, but we're dealing with more than 400 Israeli companies every year that are active in the Australian market. And that makes me very proud and happy. And I think that there is a lot of interest in Australia from the perspective of Israeli companies.
And I can attest to the fact that Monday.com is actually phenomenal. So I personally use it myself. I love it. Ohad, thank you so much for joining us here on SBS. This has been such a thrill to get you on the show. And I have, honestly, so many more questions. I know that you're also involved with the Energy Week. Both events are coming up in Israel. There's a lot more to talk about. Maybe we'll catch you again before those happen in Israel and we can discuss them more broadly. But for now, thank you very much for joining us on SBS Hebrew.
Thank you very much for having me, Muriel.
עקבו אחרינו והפיצו אותנו דרך דף הפייסבוק שלנו.